This is Ed Mazur, chairman of the City Club of Chicago. Our speaker today, after 8 days in office, was Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot. She said there has been no honeymoon phase for her. She's very concerned about the issue of public safety. She said we had a very tough weekend in Chicago. 43 people were shot and 5 were killed. Obviously, she said, the number one concern of everyone in Chicago is public safety and security. She's going to work as hard as she can to make people feel safe in using our parks, public areas, and walking the streets of Chicago. She said, I'm a killer. The culture of corruption is a legacy that must be killed. I'm dedicated to attracting capital and investment to underserved areas. She said she will work for changing the system of power. Aldermanic privilege, she said. We put a knife into that about a week ago. There are people that get hurt, and the city cannot develop the way it should because of aldermanic privilege. Aldermen, she said, have historically used privilege to reinforce segregation in Chicago. That day is over. She said we cannot have 50 separate standards for economic development for the citizens of Chicago. Elected officials should realize that there will be tremendous changes. I'm going to strengthen the Inspector General's office. Change is hard, but it's necessary. We must address the systematic causes of violence. She said civilian oversight of the CPD is very important to her tenure in office. Then she talked about the financial crisis. She said the city has serious problems, but she believes there are too many fines and fees that affect the middle class and poor. She promises some interesting developments in the weeks to come. She wants to increase the minimum wage by 2021 and to improve working conditions so that single heads of households can be able to pick up their kids after school, daycare, and more. She said we must put city finances on a solid long-term footing. She hopes to work very positively and cooperatively with Governor Pritzker in Springfield. She said, I'm in favor of the fair tax. I'm in favor of legalizing marijuana. And I'm in favor of a casino in Chicago. But she didn't say where in the city of Chicago. To be successful, she said, everyone in the city needs to be all in. Kind of a Kennedy-esque approach of ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. Replace country with city, and that was her message. The next 100 days, she said, are very important. She said, I and my team will aggressively be moving forward. We must move from hope to action.
Mayor Lori Lightfoot, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Thank you. So you're supposed to stand after you speak. And I'm noting that my wife is one of the last people to stand up. But that's okay. We'll talk about that later. Thank you, Jay, as always, for a wonderful introduction. And it's my great pleasure to be here at the City Club. As Jay noted, I've spoken here before, but this is the first time I'm here as a mayor of this great city, and I'm grateful to be here. As I look across this room, there are many people that I could thank individually for really being a source of great support and inspiration and constructive criticism over the years. But I want to acknowledge members of my team that are here. Can you please stand? Members of the new administration, go ahead, Jenny, don't be shy, and others that are here. These are the people that we're going to be looking to really lead us. I think that the mark of a good leader, I won't say a great leader, but a good leader, is setting the vision, picking great people, and then empowering them to do incredible, innovative work. And that's what we are striving towards. I also want to give a special shout-out to members of the Civic Consulting Alliance who are here with us as well. They did yeoman's job in helping us set up our transition, helping us identify and source talent, and really keeping us on track during the course of the transition. So to my friends at the Civic Consulting Alliance, thank you so much. And I also want to acknowledge the people, mostly women, who were really, really instrumental in putting forward the work that we did in the inauguration, and I think did a really fantastic job for making sure that we were accessible and giving people from across the city an opportunity to participate, and also managing my challenging family from far and wide. I see Michelle Boone. I don't know if Lynn Lockwood is here or other members of the team, but please do stand up and be acknowledged. As you would expect, we've been very hard at work in these 8 days since the inauguration. And it's hard to believe that it was just really that short of time, because a lot has happened in the intervening time. And for the record, I'm not going to make any unsubstantiated claims about crowd size at the inauguration. But suffice it to say, I was humbled and really honored to see so many people from across the city participate in the inauguration festivities. It's an important thing, an important moment in our city, and I was so glad that so many people from the neighborhoods in particular were able to participate. And so, again, thank you to Lynn and Michelle and their team for making that possible. For those of you who saw and heard me on the campaign trail, you ought to have a pretty strong idea of what my administration's agenda will be about. Many have said we're still in the honeymoon phase, but the reality is, in city government, as Tom Donovan, my friend, knows well, there is no honeymoon phase. The challenges start from day one, and certainly we have a long list, and our plate is overflowing. As you may know, as part of our effort to prevent what is typically a violent weekend, I traveled all across the city over Memorial Day, and I want to share with you some observations and experiences that I had that, again, will inform a lot of what we do over this next 100 days. In so many ways, there's no better place than Chicago on these first weekends in May, although we're not feeling that today. But in too many neighborhoods, weekends like the one we just got through fill residents with dread. This weekend, despite our coordinated efforts, and despite all the agencies showing up and delivering programming and resources, and just a present to be out there, 43 people were shot and 5 died. So we can't claim victory, and we certainly can't celebrate. We have much more work to do. I was struck this weekend traveling across the South and the West Sides how desolate so many of these neighborhoods felt for blocks and blocks. How hard it is to simply just find a place to sit down and have a cup of coffee or grab lunch. In other neighborhoods, the energy was absolutely electric. I stopped by the Mole de Mayo Fest in Pilsen, and the place was absolutely packed and alive. Businesses were thriving. Customers were there. People were having a great time. And I toured North Avenue Beach with Superintendent Johnson, and it, too, was jam-packed. And then I traveled to Rainbow Beach. It was a warm and sunny day, but Rainbow Beach was virtually empty. Now, there are probably many reasons for this, but one is surely that people don't feel safe enjoying what our city has to offer. And as I walked along the sand, I couldn't help but think back to the history of Rainbow Beach. This is, after all, 2019. And I thought of 1919, 100 years ago, when a black teen swimming too close to the then all-white Rainbow Beach sparked a race riot that killed 38 people. I thought of the early 1900s when the NAACP and other civil rights activists tried again to reintegrate Rainbow Beach, holding wait-ins. Still, the racism and segregation continued. And that can't be lost on us. These legacies of racial discrimination and race and class-based inequality are tied to the culture of corruption that has favored the clouded and the wealthy in this city for far too long. And those legacies intertwine. Thank you. And we can't ignore the fact that those legacies intertwine lie at the root of every challenge and problem that my new administration faces today. Chicago's income and housing segregation, the concentrated violence, the precarious financial reality for working families, the lack of good-paying jobs, the systematic disinvestment that we see in places like Austin compared to the virtual open spigot of capital that is flowing to neighborhoods like Lincoln Park. All of these pieces are part of a deliberate policy choices made in decades past by people in power in this town. And no, they aren't new. They are as old as the machine. They are the machine. The neighborhoods that are today shut off from employment opportunities and lending capital were once thriving hubs of investment and economic activity. Garfield Park, Roseland, Woodland, Woodlawn, Austin, and North Lawndale. And what happened? Well, culminating in 1968, these neighborhoods saw white families and the capital that they had and could attract leave after being scared by redlining real estate agents and banks seeking profit from racism and fear. The material wealth of black families that were left behind tied to real estate prices plummeted. You know this. For many black families, their only asset is their home. And when that home value depreciates because of discrimination, it means that they have lost a valuable part of their financial future. And government, sadly, was quite literally valuing black families less than white families. That reality must and will end. On average, majority white neighborhoods receive more than 4.5 times as much market investment per household as majority African American neighborhoods, and more than 2.5 times as much investment in majority Latinx neighborhoods. The violence that plagues these economically isolated and racially segregated communities isn't also no surprise. It's what happens when the government and private capital pull out and value other neighborhoods over these neighborhoods in our city. When schools are closed and crumbling, when once thriving residential blocks become abandoned and then overgrown with weeds and open-air drug markets, when commercial corridors that used to have small banks and restaurants and theaters can't get loans to run businesses and can't compete with large chains that won't invest, when people, mostly black and brown men, are prevented from getting a job or fully participating in our civic life because of mass incarceration, violence is the symptom of a much bigger unfurling cause. And let me be clear. The communities that I'm talking about, black and brown communities, while devoid of a lot of private capital, are not in deficit. That's the sad part. Quite the contrary. They are among the crown jewels of our great city, even if they are socially and economically segregated and struggling. They are home to world-class parks like Rainbow Beach, world-class architecture, world-class restaurants and art institutions, and they have and have been long been strong, resilient, and dynamic in spite of the challenges that they face. They are some of the great sources of community and civic wealth in Chicago, producing many of our organizers, our artists, our culture makers, our poets, and our small business success. They are filled with proud civic and community leaders who have been forced to work against government and market forces. They now have a supporter and partner in City Hall and a government that will work with them. Because I know that the government created these conditions and systems, and so under my administration, I will be leading the effort to solve them. Changing that system of power and how it must now be directed to improve the daily lives and the pocketbooks of all Chicagoans is what my administration will be about. That's what voters sent me here to do. That's what I mean when I talk about equity. It's about changing the systems predicated on race and structural racism that on leaving working families struggling paycheck to paycheck that determine who wins, who loses, and who is left out altogether. That's why I started my administration eliminating what seems like a wonky-sounding, powerful practice known as aldermanic prerogative. Aldermanic prerogative is the practice of aldermen using their office to unilaterally decide everything from who gets a business license, who gets a permit, who gets a sidewalk cafe, and who gets an awning for their storefront. Now, some aldermen yield this power that were literally picking winners and losers. Who gets help and who gets hurt? It is a gateway to opportunity that up until I signed the executive order last Monday, May 20th, some aldermen wielded as they saw fit. Some aldermen and their benefactors in the real estate industry have used it to reinforce segregation in Chicago, to pile subsidized and affordable housing into black and brown wards and keep it out of white wards. They've used it to make the cost of opening and running a business so high that entrepreneurs that are shut out from a chance to make a living, invest in a neighborhood, and contribute to Chicago's civic life. And folks, I've heard this not only from small business people, and there have been many that have told me about these stories, but I've heard it from some people who are of incredible wealth, who feel like the having to go to alderman and deal with aldermanic prerogative inhibits their ability to invest in neighborhoods. We can't have 50 separate standards for economic development, how resources get meted out, and who gets access to resources and power in the city. We have to have a citywide focus with a uniform standard of doing business with the Chicago city government. And I made this change not just because I ran on it. I made this change because it's fundamental to making sure that we have the opportunity to do all the other important things that have to get done in the city of Chicago. In the first 100 days, we'll push for more sweeping ethics reforms, like making sure no elected official can monetize their position for personal gain, strengthening the Office of Inspector General, raising penalties for ethics violations, and more. Because Chicago pride doesn't mean continuing the old Chicago way. My administration needs aldermen to be thought partners who will legislate with citywide challenges in mind, and I'm encouraged by the initial productive conversations we've had with so many who are welcoming these changes. Make no mistake about it, change is hard, but change is necessary. I turned to the gathered city council members a week ago because I felt like they needed to see that people in the city expect us to put the public first. So where do we go from here? First, we have to reduce the gun violence. For far too many Chicagoans, fear is their constant companion. It is with them when they wake up in the morning and is with them when they go to bed at night. Fear should not be the constant companion of our children. And yet today it is in too many neighborhoods. While my administration is working to address the systemic causes of this violence, we must address the horrifying symptoms. If we can't keep Chicagoans safe, if we can't make sure the communities are violence-free, nothing else that we do will matter. This weekend at a Memorial Day event where we were honoring the sacrifices that our brave young men and women have made in the military, a speaker referenced drinking from the cup of freedom. That struck me. What does it mean to drink from the cup of freedom? To me in the city of Chicago, given the violence that we're facing, that means having the freedom to live your authentic life, to live without fear of violence. And that can't come without access to opportunity. Violence cannot be solved by law enforcement alone. We know that. We all have to play a part. And for my administration, that is true as well. From our economic development team to our public health team to our community engagement team, just to name a few. That is the philosophy behind our city, our safety initiative that we launched last week, which we will continue to be building on throughout the entire summer. That is a philosophy that means bringing more resources to our schools and our communities, but more cooperation support from local agencies and local organizations. It means assessing and implementing recommendations to increase the homicide clearance rate. It's long overdue that the City Council act swiftly in the first 100 days to pass the ordinance proposed by the Grassroots Alliance for Police Accountability, or GAPA, to create civilian oversight of the Chicago Police Department. It also means that we have to pilot new efforts to respond to non-fatal shootings with city-funded programs and services for those affected. I can't tell you how many people I met over the course of this weekend who were just absolutely traumatized by the level of violence that's happening in their communities, and we have an obligation to those people to do better, and we will. There are countless individuals and far too many children who are suffering from undiagnosed and untreated PTSD that is a common response to the exposure to violence. We will work to ensure that they get the treatment that they need. All Chicagoans, regardless of where they live, must be able to sip from that cup of freedom. What's clear to me is that unless we provide more resources to these communities, we're never going to get ahead of the violence. We must also address our financial crisis without balancing the city's budget on the backs of poor people. We spent a lot of time in this last month, and particularly since we took office, really doing a deep dive on city finances. And my team has been hard at work, but one thing that is abundantly clear, too much of our fines and ticketing and fees affect in the worst possible ways, the people who are least able to shoulder that financial burden. And we'll be announcing some changes in the coming days. We've got to give people relief. We can't keep driving people into bankruptcy. We've got to give them hope that they can participate in the economy and not be stripped of their basic resources because of city finances. That has got to change. What this also means is strengthening the welcoming ordinance to protect undocumented Chicagoans from the backwards policies of the current administration in Washington, D.C. I spent a significant amount of time over the last couple of days trying to do what I could in concert with Senator Durbin's office so that we could provide some relief to a family that unfortunately got deported to Colombia today. We can't have a city where people from immigrant communities that come here all over the world live in fear of the knock on the door, the stop of their car, or in this instance, that a woman who wanted to bring her child home, who had every right to be here legally, unfortunately opened up the gate to her parents who had been here for decades getting deported to a country that they haven't lived in forever. That can't be the story of our Chicago. What this also means is that we have to ensure that the wages and working conditions of families keep up with the basic economic realities of American life. With our friends in organized labor, we will increase the minimum wage to $15 an hour by 2021. We will also finally pass the Fair Work Week legislation to ensure that hourly workers have stable schedules that give them the predictability to allow them to enroll in classes, book childcare or home care for aging relatives. This initiative in particular has particular resonance for me. My mom was one of those workers. She needed to have a predictable schedule so that she knew when and how she needed to take care of us kids, provide childcare. I know this is a tough issue. People have been working diligently and hard on it, but it's absolutely essential that we make sure that women and low-wage workers have the ability to organize their lives around work so that they can take care of their children. It's critically important that we get this done. And I hope we think about it this way, that what's good for Chicago's working families can also be a boon to small business and our local economies. That's a vision that we should all be able to agree on and fight for. At the same time, we must confront our financial mess head on. Let me tell you a little bit about our financial team that we've assembled so far. Chief Financial Officer Jenny Bennett and Budget Director Susie Park. They, in the few weeks since Jenny and Susie have come on board, they, along with a legion of municipal finance experts, and one of which, of course, is Lawrence Massal and Jeff Bethke from DePaul University, have been poring over our records, burning the midnight oil and doing financial analysis and modeling, and working with our advocates in Springfield to identify a path forward to improve our fiscal situation, not just in the next budget cycle, but to really bring structural change so we can put our city finances on a long-term footing of solvency. And, of course, we are going to have to generate revenue, but we can't do it alone. We'll need to work with Springfield and the federal government, and we need to make sure that we're asking the very wealthy and big corporations to pay their fair share and provide some relief to working families. I want to congratulate Governor Pritzker, Speaker Madigan, President Cullerton, and members of the General Assembly for taking the first steps in passing the fair tax. I've also endorsed the legalization and taxation of recreational marijuana as a revenue source, and I'm hopeful that it will pass this week as well. My team is also working hard to advance a plan that creates a Chicago casino. No offense to Indiana, but that makes no sense that we keep sending our dollars by the car and bus loads to Indiana. You know that Chicago is the economic engine not only of Illinois, but of the entire upper Midwest, and our economic futures are intertwined. Failing to partner with leadership in Springfield will not happen on my watch. I'm committed to being transparent about our finances and working on fair and sensible steps to spend your tax dollars wisely. Stabilize our city's future without stripping wealth from poor and working class families, and working together to find a path forward to fully fund the pensions we have promised to working people. Finally, we will work to attract new investment capital to those areas of the South and the West Side that haven't seen new investments in a generation. We will ensure that mission capital, such as philanthropy and other flexible funding, are directed to where they are needed most, and we're working on plans to take advantage of opportunity zones that were created by the recent tax bill. This is how we will jumpstart businesses and support critical civic infrastructure investments such as parks, public art, business incubators, and environmental improvements. And we'll do it in concert with our new team of dedicated, conscientious public servants. Our new Chief Equity Officer, Candace Moore, Housing Commissioner Marissa Navarro, Deputy Mayor for Neighborhood and Economic Development, Samir Mayakar, and Director of Policy, Dan Lurie. I'm thrilled that these folks have agreed to join this administration, and I can't wait to announce new names in the future, in the coming weeks, particularly members of our Board of Education. And Fran, I think you're here somewhere. Don't ask, because I'm not telling you just yet. These will be the people that I will rely upon to execute our vision that I have laid out for you today. And who is going to help us get all of this hard but necessary work done? Well, I hope it's going to be all of you. Aldermen, our city departments, teachers, organizers, our friends in organized labor, residents, businesses, our artists and our storytellers, and just as importantly, our young people. Everyone in our city has to be all in for our city to be successful. Of course we will lead. Of course we will work with you to set a vision that makes sense on a neighborhood-by-neighborhood basis. But as I said last week, I hope all of you are asking yourself, what more can you do to dig down deeper, to help address and solve some of the challenges that we know are prevalent and are standing in the way for us to realize our full potential as a great city? Today, for all the work that has been done in our city, there are still too many children, especially black and brown kids, who have reason to believe that the city doesn't hear or see them or support them. For Chicago to change for the better, that change has to come. We have a long way to go, but some aspects of what I saw this past weekend gave me hope. I saw young people who were just happy to be out and about and enjoying the warm weather. Teachers and pastors and police officers working together, marching together to reclaim their neighborhoods. I saw families and friends of loved ones taken far too soon, come together to say enough is enough, but also to support each other. It's a journey that few of us will ever go on, but it's critically important that we not lose sight of the community of victims and witnesses who are out there who need our support, our acknowledgement, and our love. In every neighborhood, I saw this glimmer, the prospect of what a truly equitable and just Chicago can look like. Our working together is just the beginning. Our challenges have to be confronted together and solved together, and with commitment to righting the inequities and imbalances of generations past. Our shared love of Chicago must shape our city's shared future. It begins now in these first 100 days for us. We're picking up the mantle that many people have carried over years and years, and we're going to move forward aggressively to make sure that we make meaningful progress and we set the right tone to be true to the mandate that we were given, but also be true to the hope and optimism that is bursting all over this city. Even in neighborhoods where there was a lot of distress, people still have hope, and we can never, ever forget that. That is the mantra that we have to lead with. That is the mantra that we must take with us every single day that we are on this incredible journey to transform lives and to change our city. Better together means that we unite on a shared vision of how Chicago can be the greatest city in the United States, and I'm committed to doing my part and rolling up my sleeves and leading in this effort. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mayor Lightfoot. And now we have time for a few questions. If anybody has a question that they would like, I see one in the back of the room, so members of our staff will pick them up, fill them out. I see we've got a couple here. Okay.
I'm glad you have the rule that people have to put their name on it.
Exactly. So unless there's someone here whose name is Keep Chicago Clean, which is a very unusual name, by the way, we'll have to hold this question. Okay. Mayor, this is from Mary Baylor, who's with the Erie Elementary Charter School. And she'd like to know if you would include a board member who represents the interests of charter schools on your new CPS board. And Mary, by the way, you said you're not a member of the City Club, so we give you this one question. But if you come in the future, we expect you to be a member. Remember, $50, that's our only requirement. Cash, credit, check that doesn't bounce, no other admission requirement.
Well, what we tried to do, and I think my team did a really good job, is make sure that we are focused on identifying parents to sit on the new school board. I think we've put together a good team that has a lot of experience, both as parents, both as teachers, and other administrators and education experts. And I've given the tease, but I feel very good about the board that we put together. They're in the final stages of going through vetting at CPS, and I think our board president is somebody that I'm giving away a secret, won't need much introduction. But we really tried to be thoughtful about making sure that we gave parents a voice and a seat at the table. And there'll be other changes, of course, coming. Where we start is having a board that understands the necessity of focusing on neighborhood schools and making sure that equity and inclusion has to be the guiding voice at CPS. I feel very confident in the team that's there, and they'll work in concert with the board.
Thank you. This is from City Club member Summer Roberts, who's at Director of Community Engagement at Loyola University of Chicago. They're sitting up here. His question is, or her question, what role do you see higher education institutions playing in your vision for a more equitable Chicago? You already mentioned that Mr. Becky from DePaul University. So, you know, Loyola, they want to get in on it too.
And Loyola is a great university as well. Earlier today, I was able to participate in a pretty extraordinary moment led by the University of Chicago. The Pritzker Foundation has donated $100 million to standing up a first-in-its-kind in the country molecular engineering school. It was an institute. It's now a school. And in talking with President Zimmer, I commended him on expanding the notion of what the university should be like, particularly on the South Side. I came to Chicago in 1986, and there was literally a fence with barbed wire along 61st Street. Luckily, that fence is gone, and the university has expanded itself beyond those old boundaries. But it's critically important that our universities understand, and I think they do, the important role that they play as civic partners, as engines of economic development, as opening up opportunities and creating a pipeline for our young people to get good jobs and careers. And also, we, I think, need to think more creatively about ways in which we can leverage our great universities here. I mean, we've got some of the greatest collection of universities anywhere in the world, not just the country. And I think there's a lot more that we can do.
This next question is from Roberta Rakoff, City Club member, affiliated with Sinai Health System. And as a little adjoinder, of course, her late father, Milton Rakoff, professor at the University of Illinois, was a mentor to my predecessor as chairman here, Paul Green, and to myself. And, of course, he wrote that famous book, you know, We Don't Want Anybody That Nobody Sent. So, this is her question, Mayor.
There's a little irony to that.
I know. You have, but 74% of the electorate sent you. Okay. You have powerfully argued for reinvestment in neglected communities. How do we ensure that when that happens, gentrification does not drive out community residents?
That's a great question. I think the only way that we can do that is make sure that we're thoughtful and intentional on the front end about what those kinds of investments are, and that we work with people on the ground in those neighborhoods to understand what their particular needs are. And then as we open up the doors for transformation, that it's done with an eye towards making sure that longtime residents, whether they're renters or homeowners, continue to have a place in their neighborhoods. I've thought about this a lot, and particularly with seniors. When you develop a network of contacts in your neighborhood where you know where the grocery store is, you know how to get your health care, you've got people who are looking out for you, we have to be conscious of that and thinking about the ways in which we're doing economic development. We can't just let it happen. That's what the problem has been. That's what I think it's challenged us. But I think if we're smart and intentional about it, we can have neighborhoods transform in a way that doesn't do harm to longtime residents.
Thank you. This is from City Club member Char Rivette. She's with the Chicago Children's Advocacy Center. Mayor, thank you for mentioning us in your plan for a comprehensive trauma response. Are you willing to create or appoint a staff to oversee youth budget and services to ensure access for all youths experiencing trauma?
Well, I think that that's got to be part of a larger comprehensive plan to make sure that we're restitching our social safety net, particularly when it comes to resources available for those who are living with mental illness or suffering trauma. I actually thought that was the question I was going to get from Roberta, because we've had a lot of conversations about that over the years. But no, I'm very mindful of the fact that our young people are experiencing levels of trauma like their veterans who have done tours of duty in Iraq and Afghanistan. You see it. on the faces of the kids. You see it in the ways in which they are engaging with others, whether it's in school or outside of school. And there's no question in my mind that as part of what's driving the violence in our city. So, yes, we will come up with, and we are developing with, in partnership with clinicians and people on the ground, a comprehensive plan to address the challenges that we have in this area.
Thank you. This is from City Club member Ashvin Ladd. He'd like to know, which are the big city mayors that you have reached out to for advice, or vice versa, have called you to give you advice, and what kind of advice have you been sharing?
Well, I'm in the learning and listening phase, and I had conversations with people from L.A., from New York, and all their smaller communities, even around Chicago. I think there's a lot that I can learn from the experiences of other mayors. I've already started a relationship with the U.S. Conference of Mayors, and I expect that to be something that's fruitful. There's a lot of also the Urban Institute, I think, is really an important think tank to help us think through challenges that we have, but also listening to people on the ground here. I meant what I said before. We've got incredible talent in the academy in Chicago, whether it's U of C, Loyola, DePaul, UIC with its various institutes that focus on addressing urban challenges. I want to make sure that the great work that is done here doesn't get relegated to the dustbin of history or some academic journal, that we're actually engaging with our university partners in particular and others who are working on and addressing challenging urban issues. We're taking all comers. We don't think that we're the smartest kids in the room or that we've got a corner on the market. We're going to reach out to people all across the city to learn from them and use what they have learned and develop in the policies that we put forward in the city.
Okay, thank you. This is from City Club member Tom McElroy with Level One Solutions. He'd like to know your thoughts on central development in the Third Ward and their proposed innovative method of financing.
I don't know enough about it yet to be able to have an opinion one way or the other. We have a briefing that's scheduled for sometime soon. But like with anything, and I've been very clear about this, development is important, growth is important, but we have to be thoughtful about the way in which we do it. I don't know how long this plan has been in the works, but I'm uncomfortable with the notion that we're going to rush something through. And I know that Alderman Dow of the Third Ward, herself, a former city planner, understands that there's a lot of questions that have to be asked, and we are committed to a community engagement process. You know, I keep driving by the stretch of land along just west of Soldier Field, and I keep thinking, how are they going to do this, and how are they going to do it in a way that doesn't negatively impact the buildings on the west side of that that stretch of land? How are they going to do that in a way that doesn't devalue their property? So I have a lot of questions, and I look forward to getting them answered from the developers and also from the local folks and Alderman Dow.
Okay, thank you very much. We just have a couple more questions here. This is from City Club member Harvin Singh. It's kind of a three for one. But I first met her 30-some years ago on the Alt boat, and I should have probably dumped her in the water if I knew she was going to ask this question. What are your infrastructure priorities? When do you expect to name the new CDOT commissioner? And how can the WBE goal be increased?
Thanks for asking me such easy questions. We are in the process of conducting a national search regarding CDOT. I feel very comfortable with Tom Carney. He's stepped up as the interim commissioner. I talk to them on a daily basis as I drive around the city and see potholes and roads dug up and other things. So they're very familiar with me. But I feel like we're moving in the right direction there. And I've already forgotten the other two questions.
Oh, something about increasing WBE?
Increasing WBE and MBE participation is a big, important issue for me. Some of you may have read that one of the new city council committees that we are organizing and hopefully will get voted into existence tomorrow is a committee that is specifically focused on MBE, WBE participation. I want to make sure that there's a measure. Thank you. I want to make sure that we've got accountability and that it's not numbers that get rolled out just at budget time in October. I want this to be a consistent benchmark that we are measuring, and I feel very confident that that committee will do the work that's necessary to hold all of us accountable. And the last thing I think you asked was about infrastructure. Well, I think the question is for Springfield on infrastructure. We have put together a comprehensive list led by work that we need and resources that we need for the CTA to make sure that they're able to continue to do the great work led by Dorval Carter. We hope that something will actually happen this week. You know, there's a difference between horizontal and vertical. I think the vertical is going to be much more challenging, but I'm hoping that the legislative session will not come and go without real work on an infrastructure bill. We have to have it.
Thank you. And thank Dorval Carter, who's right down here. He's been a panelist and a speaker, and we really appreciate his support of the City Club. Okay, two questions. One, you probably anticipated in some way because you've responded to this a couple times already. It's a question about your relationship with the CPD and choosing a non-CPD person to head your security detail. The question is from Patricia Provenzano, City Club member.
Well, I hope that my relationship with CPD is good, and it is from the perspective of the officers that I know who are friends of mine that are on the job and also the feedback that I get. But we have challenges, no doubt about it, and it goes way beyond the work that needs to be done regarding the consent decree. You've heard me speak on this issue many, many times, and I'll repeat what I've said before because I think it's still true. We have to get to a place in the city where our young officers understand that respectful constitutional engagement with the community is their most powerful tool. Make no mistake about it. Our residents can't be safe if CPD isn't successful. And CPD isn't going to be successful if they don't have a measure of legitimacy within the communities where they serve. I was out in Austin yesterday at an event at a local school over there, and one of the things I mentioned to Commander Cato of the 15th District is how pleased I was to see officers out there interacting with young people and the gathered crowd just to get to know each other as people. That is what's going to make the difference. That's hard work. You can't wave a magic wand and make it happen, but it's the only way that we're going to be able to bring the community and the police together. We also have to provide more support to our police officers from training, but also to trauma care. I'm distressed that we've had, I think, 7 suicides in our police department in the last year. And I said this to Kevin Graham, and I'll say it here publicly. Rather than focusing on no, focus on bringing resources and support to our officers so that they can get what they need to be able to be successful. If they're not, it shows up on the street. It shows up in the interactions, literally the millions of interactions on a yearly basis that we will never see, but that will directly affect the community's perception and embrace of our police department. We have to do better by our young officers, just as we have to do better by our young people and those communities that are under siege. There's been a lot of ink spilt about the head of my security detail. I find it interesting that a guy who has protected Supreme Court justices, high-ranking federal judges, and has a record of accomplishment and service as a former U.S. Marshal, is somebody who is the object of fascination. But I'm comfortable with Jim Smith. He's going to be the leader of that detail. He has protected me personally from things that have happened along the way. And there's nothing more valuable to me than making sure that when I leave, I get to come home to my wife and my child and that they are protected. So people have a problem with that? That's my priority.
This is from Masal, so we have to... Okay, the very last question. This is from Lawrence Masal, the chair of the Civic Federation, frequent City Club speaker on many of our panels, and a proud graduate of St. Ignatius High School, right? Okay. And Loyola. Okay, we don't want to leave you guys out. Man, okay. In addition to maintaining Chicago's historic role as welcoming immigrants, what are the best options for reversing Chicago's population loss?
It's a great question. Look, I think we have to give people reason to stay. We have to deal with the violence. We need to make sure that young families, when they're thinking about staying in Chicago or leaving, have a great neighborhood school that they know that their child can get into. We need to make sure that we are providing them with financial relief. Property taxes are killing people, and they're driving them out of the city. There's a multitude of factors that are leading to the exodus, but first we have to recognize it as a significant challenge and not ignore it. It's not acceptable that we continue to be one of the few metropolitan areas in the country that's losing population. You've heard me say this before. It should be the proverbial canary in the mine shaft. People are voting with their feet. They're leaving our great city. So we need to reverse that trend through some of the things that I've outlined today to give people a reason to stay and for new people to come. We have to have a Chicago renaissance, and it starts with controlling the violence and the importance of our public schools and getting our fiscal house in order.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's give the mayor of Chicago a big round of applause.